the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation, here's Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Here's your host, Danielle Leal.
Good Tuesday morning, and thanks for starting off your day with us here at AgNet West. Well, according to the California Farm Bureau, as the demand for avocados has risen, so has the demand for avocados grown organically. The California Avocado Commission reports organic fruit represents about 10% of the current year's avocado harvest, and that the proportion has been increasing. Most organic avocados have been transitioned from conventional production, a process that takes about 3 years before the fruit can be sold as organic. Moving on to what's happening in today's show, Brian German is talking with us about a trade mission to Canada. Taylor Hillman has details on the walnut production. But first, I'm starting off the show today with some news about folks who might need some natural disaster relief. Let's jump right in. Signups for the Wildfire and Hurricane Indemnity Program starts this week. California has seen a mild wildfire season so far this year. However, damages from last year continue to linger. USDA announced that signups for the Wildfire and Hurricane Indemnity Program, also known as WIP, will begin this Wednesday. The assistance is designed to help producers recover from natural disasters from both last year and this year. Richard Fordyce, administrator of the Farm Service Agency, says Congress set aside funds in June of this year to help American farmers in their recovery efforts.
Secretary did announce today the beginning of the disaster bill that was a part of the additional supplemental appropriations for Disaster Relief Act of 2019. This is just a touch over $3 billion that Congress has put toward these recovery efforts, and we are going to begin with the WIP Plus program. The WIP Plus program will be very similar to the WIP program of last year.
Fordyce gives more details on eligibility.
Eligibility for WIP Plus will be for producers that are in a county that either had a presidential disaster declaration or a secretarial disaster declaration in the primary county. However, producers that are not in counties that had the presidential or secretarial declaration can also, if they can supply supporting documentation to prove that they were harmed and they did have losses based on the storms covered under this program, that they too would be eligible.
The program will cover losses from natural disasters that happen across the nation, such as hurricanes, wildfires, floods, volcanic activity, snowstorms, and more. You should contact your local FSA for more information. And now here's Taylor Hellman with more agriculture news.
California walnut trees look to be a little light this year, but predictions are still good. USDA's National Agricultural Statistics Service issued their 2019 California walnut objective measurement, and it's a little bit down this year compared to last. The forecast is at 630,000 tons. That's down 6.8% from 2018's final production of 676,000 tons. The forecast is based on 365,000 bearing acres, which is up 4.3% from 2018's estimated bearing acreage of 350,000. Like many other crops, bloom was delayed for walnut producers this year, primarily due to record amounts of rain and cooler temperatures during early spring months. The NASS report did note that producers said those temperatures increased quality and kernel size, however. Because of the weather variability, crop quality is reported as varied across the producing regions. The lightness in the forecast seems to be with the nuts per tree, as the report noted that survey results showed an average nut set per tree of 983. That's down 16.4% from 2018's 1,176. Percent of sound kernels in shell was 98.9% statewide. In shell weight per nut was 22.7 grams. NASS said that nearly all of the sizing measurements were above the previous year's levels.
The California State Board of Food and Agriculture held another public comment session last week in Fresno on California's water future. The input provided through the series of public comment sessions will help the California Department of Food and Agriculture, the Natural Resources Agency, and the California Environmental Protection Agency develop recommendations for Governor Gavin Newsom to address his water resiliency portfolio for California. CDFA Secretary Karen Ross said the meeting was productive and highlighted the cooperative spirit the industry has adopted in addressing water issues moving forward.
I'm absolutely impressed by it, and I also know from my years of working in this arena, we cannot succeed if we don't work together, and that's what I saw here today. I'm very impressed with the leadership that's here. These are desperate times. Farming is not getting easier. There's all the long list of issues, and water is the heartbeat of how we do what we do, but people are really embracing innovation. They're looking at technology, but how many times today did we hear about we have to be training future water leaders today, because it's a complex arena and not everybody gets engaged in it. And we need to look at how we make decisions. We need to strengthen partnerships and we need to bring in all the perspectives and collaborate. That's not an easy thing. I think Dave Corey said it best. These stakeholder processes are tedious and painful sometimes, but we always achieve better results by going through that process.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
At last count, almost half of California dairies have signed up for the Dairy Margin Coverage Program. The deadline to do so is approaching. USDA's Gary Crawford has the details.
Dairy producers, you've got only a couple of weeks to sign up for the Dairy Margin Coverage Program.
We've had 17,000 producers so far that have signed up for that program.
Out of about 40,000 who would be eligible, this from Undersecretary of Agriculture Bill Northey. He says the coverage is retroactive back to January 1st, and already indemnity payments for 2019 are up to about $200 million.
On premiums of about $60 million for the program.
So for this year, it's almost a no-brainer, but Northey says the program can cover producers going forward years ahead. But of course,
we all hope that the margin is much better than a $9.50 margin coverage here. But if it's not, for a small premium, you have some coverage and that can get you where hopefully the margin is better again.
And so Bill Northey says,
for most producers, it makes a lot of sense to be covered.
Sign up ends September 20th. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Washington.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation at our website at www.agnetwest.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
A group of 53 delegates, including 10 agribusinesses and organizations from California, were in Canada last week on one of the 7 trade missions that had been scheduled for the year to foster trade relationships. While the group was in Montreal, U.S. Department of Agriculture Undersecretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs, Ted McKinney, who led the trade trip, highlighted the 3 most important aspects of missions like these.
The primary is that we bring with us a number of branded companies, always in the small to mid-range, and inevitably our larger commodity groups of all sizes, shapes, types join us as well. And for those branded companies, a lot of their time is spent in what I lovingly call speed dating. We have a person that serves as a matchmaker that matches those who are coming along to sell with people in country, or in this case, the 2 provinces, first Ontario when we were in Toronto, and now Quebec, where we are in Montreal, with people who might buy. And inevitably, there's always some buying going on as well. And I love that because we always talk about trade being a very important two-way street. So selling, and in some cases buying, is one leg of our 3-legged stool. Also very important, the role I tend to play is we have government-to-government meetings. And as much as I can, and it's about it's the majority of the time, we bring our State Department of Ag representatives along for those visits. So G2G or government to government. And finally, we visit key customers, people who have been purchasing or may be interested in purchasing U.S. food and ag products for their processing. And so once again, we have fulfilled or are fulfilling all 3 of those important elements.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
Well, in today's livestock news, back in July, the House Agriculture Committee's Livestock and Foreign Agriculture Subcommittee held a hearing to review the state of the U.S. livestock and poultry economies. Various folks from the livestock industry were unanimous in their message about passing U.S.-Mexico-Canada Trade Agreement, otherwise known as USMCA. And with Congress returning to work this week, that push will continue. But despite the fact that agreement has yet to be passed, USDA trade economist Cameron Doherty says there's been a surge in export sales of live animals and red meats in the second half of this fiscal year.
Due to African swine fever and Mexico removing their retaliatory tariffs on pork products, we've seen an uptick in live animal exports and red meat and products exports. We have live animals at $808 million, and it's up 11% relative to last fiscal year. And we have red meat and products at $12.8 billion, which is at the same level it was last fiscal year. But that's a large improvement from the levels it was earlier this year, where we saw it well below last fiscal year levels.
Again, that was USDA trade economist Cameron Doherty. Well, assuming the trade negotiations ever get going between the U.S. and the United Kingdom, feathers on both sides could get a bit ruffled over poultry. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson told U.S. Vice President Mike Pence we're not too keen on chlorinated chicken. During a recent visit to the UK, Pence did admit that poultry could become a sticky issue in the negotiations. Politico says Johnson's comments referred to the American practice of washing chicken with chemicals to kill pathogens like salmonella and E. coli. The process is called pathogen reduction treatment, and it's banned in the European Union. During dinner remarks last week, Pence admitted that chlorinated chicken will be the subject of some pretty tough discussions. And Dairy Farmers of America, a national cooperative owned by family farmers across the country, is beginning to recruit startups for its 2020 Accelerator Program, which helps mentor and grow companies in the areas of ag technology and dairy food products. Now, for their 2020 program, DFA is seeking early-stage food product companies that are dairy-focused or dairy-based. On the ag tech front, DFA is looking for companies with ag tech applications related to any portion of the dairy value chain that includes, but not limited to, product testing, data management, herd health management, supply chain optimization, sustainability, and traceability. Ag tech categories of particular interest to DFA include ERP systems, drone technologies, robotics and automation technologies for the farm, along with sensor technologies and agronomy, digester efficiency, and new technology in animal health. Now, the DFA Accelerator is a 90-day immersive program with a combination of on-site meetings and virtual programs to provide training. If you'd like to learn more, just simply go to the DFA website. You can go to dfa.brightidea.com. That's dfa.brightidea.com. I'm Randall Wiseman for AgNet West.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. More agriculture news and farm features are coming up. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
USDA's latest farm income forecast, looking at 2019, reveals
net farm income is forecasted $88 billion, and that's up 4.8% from 2018.
Agriculture Department Deputy Chief Economist Warren Preston says despite the forecasted net farm income rise for this year, even adjusted for inflation, that would be over 35% below the peak of $136.5 billion in 2013. Why the year-over-year increase in net farm income?
We're now forecasting net cash farm income for 2019 at $112.6 billion. That's up 7.3% relative to 2018 in nominal dollars.
However, cash receipts for all commodities are not expected to rise this year.
Cash receipts from commodity sales are expected to be down by $2.4 billion, 0.6% relative to 2018.
With declines in broiler and egg cash receipts offsetting increases in milk and hog receipts cash-wise, and total crop receipts are down $3.3 billion. So the projected increase in net farm income, according to Preston, is coming from other farm-related income sources.
A couple of factors here. One of those is direct government payments that we're expecting to increase by $5.8 billion. That's up 42.5% from 2018. And commodity insurance indemnities to increase by $6.1 billion. That's an 80% increase from 2018.
Total production expenses are forecasted to increase in 2019 as well, up $1.5 billion to over $346 billion.
Farm sector assets and debt are both forecast to increase by a 2% increase in farm sector assets and a 3.4% increase in debt. So the debt is continuing to rise at a bit of a faster pace than the value of farm sector assets.
Meanwhile, farm sector equity is forecasted up almost 2% year over year.
Overall, for the farm sector, the likelihood of default remains relatively low, despite the increases that we've seen in debt since 2012.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
Some home remedies for bee stings. That's coming up on This Land of Ours. The basics for treating any sting is to make sure you remove the stinger as quickly as possible. In most cases, you can use the edge of a credit card or your fingernail to gently scratch where you were stung. Do not use a tweezer to pull it out. You may squeeze more venom into your womb. By scraping it out, you avoid touching the venom sac, which is often still attached with bee stings. Some natural bee sting remedies to try at home include honey. By applying honey to the sting, it can initiate healing, reduce pain, and relieve itching. Baking soda can be helpful too. Create a paste with water and apply it to the stung area. It helps soothe your discomfort. Leave on the paste for about 15 minutes at a time and reapply as needed. Apple cider vinegar is also a bee sting soother. Pour some ACV in a bowl, then soak a brown paper bag in the ACV and use it as a compress. Toothpaste is also thought to be an amazing help for bee stings. It's believed that the toothpaste may neutralize the acidity in the bee venom. I'm Kathy Isom for AgNet West.
Good day, everybody. Albert J. Hernandez, the Untamed Chef for AgNet West. Welcome to the California Kitchen, where you can learn how to cook from an award-winning chef in under 3 minutes or less. I'm your host with the most. Let's get untamed. My recipe today is an almond butter-basted halibut steak. Now, being that we're in the season of Lent and I am Catholic, I love every Friday to share some kind of a recipe that's going to make this a little bit easier for everyone. Now, this recipe, not only is it simple to do, but it's a lot of fun too. And there's nothing better than perfectly cooking a piece of fish. Now, keep in mind that fish is supposed to be cooked to medium well at the most. And honestly, saying that's probably sacrilegious on my part. So cook all your fish to medium, especially a nice expensive cut of fish. You really want to make sure you can taste that fish. And when you overcook it, guess what? You might as well have tilapia in the pan because it doesn't make a difference. So the very first step, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take my halibut steaks. Now, you always want to make sure there's no extra bloodline on your halibut steaks. Usually, your butcher would do a good job doing that, but lately, I haven't been very lucky, so I've been having to cut my own. Now, when you clean the halibut, you really just want to make sure that not only is the bloodline removed, but any excess pieces of the skin. If you're doing skin on, more power to you. This specific recipe is designed to be a skin off recipe because we're actually going to build a nice toasted almond crust. So the very first step is to make sure the halibut are all dry, and I use just a paper towel to do that. I'm going to put a little bit of olive oil, just kind of brush it right over the top. And then I'm going to also add to this a salt and pepper, herb de Provence, and a little bit of lemon pepper as well. And this is a to taste part of the recipe because I know everyone has a different preference for how much seasoning they actually want on top of their food. Very last, I'm going to take our toasted almonds, and I would love personally to run all the almonds through a blender. That way the almonds will adhere better to the fish. And then I put them in the refrigerator for about 15 minutes. That way everything just kind of, I'm not sure how the science works behind it, to be quite honest with you. But every time I'm about to serve something, I like to put it in the fridge, especially with the fish. And the moisture just kind of helps those almonds to stick a little bit better. I don't know how it does, but it does. I'm going to put this skin side down or almond side down into a pan with 2 tablespoons of vegetable oil, my 4 steaks. Carefully, I'm going to drop in 1/2 stick of butter. I know this, if you want to do this the healthy way, you can always bake it. This specific recipe is not the healthy way. And I'm going to baste these fish, which means I'm going to turn my pan to a 45-degree angle. And using a nice open spoon, I'm going to just toss that bubbling fat. It's going to be almost like a brown butter when this is all done, over the top of our fish. This process usually takes about 4 minutes, and then I'll turn it over where the almonds are up, and I'll repeat the same process for 2 more minutes, and then I will take it off the heat, let it sit on almost like a drip rack, which means we want to make sure any excess oil that's on the fish comes out, and I would like to let it come to room temperature and serve. For this and many more of my untamed recipes, go to my website, www.ajhtheuntamedchef.com. And as always, this is Albert J. Hernandez. You can call me the Untamed Chef for AgNet West.
This is Farm City News Day by AgNet West. We'll have more of the day's agriculture news in just a moment. And remember, you can always get the latest agriculture news from across the state and the nation at our website at www.agnetwest.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City Newsday. I'm Danielle Leal. We welcome back one of our partners in Harvestport, who has some new added value to their service. Online tools that can help a grower make important decisions about inputs and cost. AgNet West's Taylor Hillman has the interview.
Okay, we're talking again with one of our sponsors, Harvestport, the founder and CEO, Brian Dawson. Brian, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Taylor. I appreciate you having me.
Let's review for anybody who doesn't remember Harvestport. What do you guys do?
We are a marketplace for agricultural resources. Specifically, we save time and money on crop inputs for growers throughout California and now the Midwest as well.
And the way that works is basically you aggregate a bunch of needs in your system, are able to get it in bulk, and that savings then gets passed on to the producer, correct?
That's correct. We're a little bit like a digital co-op, but without all the cumbersome bureaucracy and legal entanglements that come with a traditional co-op.
Very good. So we're talking today to talk about some new aspect you guys have going on. When we were talking before we started recording, you talked about added value added here, and the fact that you're not just getting cheaper inputs anymore. You now have a series of tools online that producers can go on and look at to help them make decisions. Did I get that right?
That's correct. Yeah, I think our entry point for the grower is, hey, we can save you a buck. And that, of course, is very resonant with the farmers we deal with. But I think beyond sheer savings and reduced costs in the field, we now have begun deploying our product tools, which I would describe as providing business intelligence, where people can look holistically at a large operation. Here are six different ranches. Here is the forecast of what we need. What would happen if we swapped this input out for another? How does that look? How does that affect our overall spend? How does that affect our, predictive outputs? We also can lay out and clearly let somebody analyze at sort of the push of a button what is going on in terms of unusual spend. So if you have multiple ranches, multiple pieces of acreage, and one is higher per acre than another, it's much easier for a CEO, an owner, a CFO to identify, oh, okay, this spend makes sense and is justified and, essentially everything looks great, or hey, there's something strange going on here. We ought to look at this. We ought to look at getting some uniform inputs. And really, we're just trying to quickly lay out all the possible scenarios where a farmer could increase value in their operation.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So you could use this in multiple ways. The way you're describing it is to identify inaccuracies might be the wrong word, but that to identify something that sticks out and be able to maybe correct it and save some money.
That's right. I think in general, particularly with some of the large grower organizations you have, it's been very, very hard for high level folks to get, a handle on exactly what's going on in the field. And I think this ends up bridging the two to everybody's benefit, where the people in the field are able to more confidently make their decisions because the ownership or the outside shareholders have a complete window into what's going on. So you're not having to justify your expenditures. You're able to see exactly what a spend is. And it's helpful too, as people are starting to look at individually, tracking inputs versus outputs from input to output. Where are, if we have this input or we reduce traditional chemical applications, for example, to get a premium on an output, how does that affect our costs? Some of the guys we have are transitioning to organic programs or hitting various sustainability metrics. We can help them think that through, plot that out, see what the real cost outlay is to them if they're making a transition from season to season.
Yeah. And so the other way that someone could possibly use this is if they're thinking about a change, or if they are looking at possibly cutting some costs, they can actually put it in there and see what it looks like before actually doing it.
That's correct. Yeah, we try to get with all our growers, do an extensive forecast, really take a look at their complete operation. And I think that's something that's unique for us as an ag tech platform. We're not operating in a vacuum. Here's this individual product we're trying to sell you. Here's something we're trying to do. We're taking a look at the entire spend, the entire sort of procurement ecosystem, and it allows us actually to have a much better handle on how changes are made. Because you can imagine a change in one input is never made in a vacuum. It triggers a whole bunch of different other input, associated input changes, and sometimes operational practice changes. And, you know, we can help the farmer find the right solution that works for their maximizing their dollar.
You guys continue to grow, and I'm always not surprised, but amazed by some of your partners that are lined up. You guys have Penny Newman. I know you're friends with Taylor Farms. This is just keeps going in the right direction.
We have had some great support from some wonderful, historic, in some cases, you know, California ag operators. Penny Newman has become a real key partner in this, actually, as they're growing their farm products division, and we're helping them take new innovative products to market, particularly new and innovative products that are either OMRI certified for our organic clients, or again, have what I'd call sort of a sustainability metric. Here's something that helps you reduce nitrogen application is one that a lot of growers are looking at. And yeah, Taylor has been with us from the beginning. They've been a two-time investor, just a wonderful organization to work with. But that's, you know, in general, we try to partner with best-in-class existing brick and mortar ag operations rather than, you know, circumvent or disrupt these people. We always seem to do better when we have a local partner with regional expertise and their own network, and we're adding value and, you know, in a collaborative partnership.
Yeah, definitely. If people want to find out more about Harvest Port, Brian, where can they go?
They can go to harvestport.com. That's the word harvest and then port.com.
Welcome back to AgNet West Farm City News Day. We've got more agriculture news right now.
The UC Davis Dairy Teaching and Research Facility recently got an upgrade with the installation of new milking parlor equipment. The new single-sided 8-cow parallel milking parlor was donated by De La Valle, with funding provided by the College of Agricultural and Environmental Sciences used for installation. The parlor has individual cow indexing, which will allow the collection of milk weights for each cow, and is also set up to enable cows to exit in groups of four to accommodate small groups of research cows. The new equipment replaces the 6-cow herringbone parlor that was installed back in 1992 with funding support from the California Milk Advisory Board. The new equipment will go a long way towards supporting agricultural education. The animal science major has over 1,200 students, and students enrolled in dairy management courses and internships will gain hands-on learning experiences with the new equipment. The new De La Valle equipment will also support research activities related to nutrition, health, and the environment. For AgNet West Radio Network, I'm Brian German.
And in more agriculture news, nearly 400 National Farmers Union members are in Washington, D.C. this week as part of the NF's annual fly-in. Here's Michael Clements with the report.
Amid another year of uncertain economic conditions, farmers will meet face-to-face with members of Congress and administration officials to advocate for stronger food and agricultural policy. NFU President Roger Johnson says farmers are struggling right now.
For several years, farm commodity prices have been below the cost of production, which means that most farmers are selling at a loss and are rapidly losing equity. At the same time, a recent wave of agribusiness mega-mergers has pushed up input costs. Many producers have been forced to take out more loans just to keep the doors open, causing farm debt to balloon to record levels. All of this has been compounded by a never-ending global trade war and the ongoing subversion of renewable fuel standards, both of which have wiped out critical markets for farmers and ranchers. If that weren't enough, climate change has thrown weather patterns out of whack, making it that much more difficult to grow crops and raise livestock.
Advocates from across the country will campaign for policies that strengthen the farm safety net, reduce chronic overproduction, help farmers and ranchers implement climate-smart practices, restore competition to the agricultural economy, resolve ongoing trade disputes, and expand the market for homegrown biofuels. Johnson says now is an important time to be talking with lawmakers.
Given the current circumstances, it is more important than ever that legislators hear directly from family farmers and ranchers about the issues they're dealing with. NFU members want Congress to understand the financial and environmental realities of modern agriculture, and they want to provide recommendations for what meaningful solutions look like. We hope that long after fly-in attendees return to their farms, their elected representatives will use these conversations to write policies that bolster rural America and family farm agriculture.
The three-day event began Monday and will conclude on Wednesday. More information about the NFU Fall Legislative Fly-In can be found online at nfu.org. Michael Clements reporting.
And corn prices have tumbled from lower exports and trade disputes, but one prominent corn grower says finding something to laugh about can help a person get through bad times. USDA's Gary Crawford has more.
For many farmers, well, you know.
It's been a tough few years in the farm economy.
That's Chip Bowling, a corn farmer from Maryland, the former president of the National Corn Growers Association, the first one to come from the East Coast. We talked to him out here at the Agriculture Department's Farmers Market in Washington Friday, where he spent the day talking with consumers and customers about corn, of course, and farming in general. And he says the biggest challenge for them has been the trade conflicts, the loss of markets.
We hope that these trade disputes come to an end very quickly.
Because he says commodity prices were already plunging before the trade situation with China began, so it's a serious business these days. But he says somehow you've got to find a way to laugh at things that happen, particularly with Mother Nature.
She can come and go and do as she wants, and if you don't roll with it, Mother Nature can get you down.
But some good news Friday, at least for Chip, as Hurricane Dorian was tearing through North Carolina.
For me, living in Maryland, we miss Dorian, and we're happy that that happened.
We are, too. In Washington, which also has been pretty much spared, Gary Crawford reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
To get more information on the topics you heard today, visit Agnet West online at agnetwest.com. You can follow Agnet West on Twitter and Facebook with @AgnetWest. Follow Brian German with @BrianAgnetWest, Danielle Leal with @DLealAgnetWest, and Taylor Hillman with @TheManOfTheHill. This has been Farm City Newsday by Agnet West.